Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is October 26th, 2010, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 180, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, distributor of Beaumont et Magnifique. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM.
Pew, 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 pew.
macobserver.com.
I want to know who's going to patch all these bullet holes in the studio.
I don't know. The bullets do fly thick and heavy at times here, along with other things.
Are you sure it's the bullets that are going thick and heavy?
No, there's some other substances that may be flowing thick and heavy, too. So today's title comes from, I sent out a tweet that I thought was just super clever because, you know, I often think that way about myself. it's time to distribute a bone molt. So I said, what was it? Tempestuous, I think is what I said. And no one really much said anything. So apparently I'm not as clever as I thought I am. But anyway.
Maybe you're more clever than most people can handle.
I really don't think so.
I'm just trying to help you here.
Well, thank you. That is very kind of you, actually.
Oh, no problem. It's the least I can do, and I really mean that.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Hey, did I tell you I got a new guitar?
Wait.
Don't play this
right, man. No, Brian, tell me about your new guitar.
I got a Phantom 12 string. It's an electric 12 string from Phantom Guitar Works at phantomguitar.com. It's really cool. I'm super excited about it. And it's now that I'm done with working with Bob on Incredible iPad Apps for Dummies, which comes out a couple weeks before Christmas, as well
as... Would that
as,
be Bob Levitis?
That would be Bob Dr. Mac, awesomeness personified Levitis. And as well as Nancy Muir's iPad All-in-One book from Wiley, also a Dummies book. Now that I'm done with those, I'm working on a new band project, and I'm pretty excited.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to seeing the books when they hit the shelves, and I'm also really looking forward to hearing your new tracks once you get everything recorded.
Thank you. Thank you kindly. Thank you kindly.
And then when you make it big and you have your platinum records on the wall, just try and remember us little people.
yeah, that so isn't going to happen. I mean,
great. So you're not going to remember us?
No. I'll remember the little people. I'll still be the little myself. So you know.
Okay.
Well, we actually have some fun things to talk about. So maybe we should get to it.
Yeah, I guess as long as we're here, we might as well.
Might as well, right?
Yeah. Apple updated the MacBook Air and lost its hard drive in the process. The App Store is coming to the Mac, and AT&T is scooping up new customers faster than Verizon.
Apple finally updated. Actually, you know what, Jeff? I gotta stop and just mention something.
Okay.
This is before we get to the news. I guess I could have waited until we got to the context machine within the context machine, but
you've already screwed up the flow. So go ahead.
I've just totally messed it up. I've been watching some of the videos at MacProVideo.com.
Right,
and they've already taught me so much about Logic that I didn't know that stuff that I use or will be using all the time here for our podcast, and I'm going to be writing about it for the Mac Observer. But I had to give them props because I've learned a lot, and it's MacProVideo.com.
Cool. So does this mean that we're going to start sounding smarter?
No.
Oh. They do have a filter for that, right?
No. There's no Brian and Jeff filter. There should be.
Yeah, there should be.
We need one. But unfortunately, that hasn't been added yet that I know of.
I bet there's some people out there that would argue it's been around all along. It's called mute.
It's true. All right. Apple finally updated the MacBook Air just a few days ago, breathing new life into a product that appeared to be on its last legs. The new version of the ultralight laptop comes with a choice in display sizes, 11.6 inches or 13.3 inches. And like the previous MacBook Air, the new model doesn't include FireWire ports or a built-in optical drive. And the new models dumped their internal hard drives in favor of flash RAM, or solid-state drives, which is what everybody else on the planet calls it, which has the added benefit, of course, of making the computers thinner and lighter. Since the MacBook Air is now solid-state like the iPad, Apple measures its battery life based on regular usage, which clocks in at 7 hours with standby time of 30 days.
Wow.
Yeah. The new MacBook Air has been available for only a few days, but it's already been seen as a success, unlike the original models, which were mostly seen as products in search of fat wallets. It's true.
You know, you really entertain me with those little spontaneous script changes.
With my bon mots.
That's right. Okay. Apple is hoping to match the success of its App Store for the iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad on the Mac with its just-announced Mac App Store. The new store will work as another place where Mac users can go buy software instead of the only place, so developers will still be able to sell their apps through traditional channels as well. Now, just like the App Store, Apple will take a 30% cut off of developer sales, and Apple will also apply its own copy protection to Mac apps it sells, and those apps can be installed on multiple computers, and that's assuming those computers have all been authorized to play and use content from the buyer's iTunes library. The Mac App Store is going to launch in about 90 days, and several Mac developers have already committed to using the service.
Verizon reported Friday, this is last Friday, that it signed up 997,000 new wireless customers during the September quarter. Now, that might sound like a lot, but AT&T managed to do that, then some, and they had a bag of chips left over. Mob Bell reported late on Thursday that it had signed up some 2.6 million new wireless customers, handily trouncing Verizon, the king of Android phones. Digging a little deeper into those numbers, we should look at what the industry calls postpaid accounts, or actual wireless subscription plans, as opposed to the low-end prepaid accounts. During the September quarter, Verizon had a net gain of 584,000 new postpaid accounts, while AT&T saw a net gain of 745,000 postpaid accounts. And that was just from its own retail stores, meaning that it didn't include new subscribers from Apple's retail stores, which is why we have, a good portion of those million missing numbers there. Make sense?
Yes, I had to do some new math in my head, but yes, it makes sense.
All right. In other words, AT&T gets all the bad rap for its network, while everybody and their brothers, lots of people and their cousins, are screaming about the joys of Android's ascendancy, yet for the last six quarters in a row, Ma Bell has handily crushed Big Red in new customer acquisitions. And it's all thanks to the iPhone. Alrighty, that sound means that it's time for the context machine within the context machine, which still cracks me up. And this is where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
You know, I'm glad that still cracks you up because, from my perspective, if we're keeping you entertained, we're a success.
I guess. Fortunately, I'm so easily entertained.
Which makes this job so much easier for both of us.
So you want to go in order today?
Sure, we might as well, which means we'll be starting with the MacBook Air.
I think that's the biggest diss you've ever given me. On air, at least.
But done with love.
Me being easily amused makes this job easier for you. You sound like a disgruntled babysitter.
Yeah, welcome to my world.
Alrighty, so MacBook Air, what do you think?
You know, I think it actually looks really cool. And sadly, I haven't been able to see one in person yet because none of the Apple stores around me have them in stock.
Well, that's interesting because the Apple stores around here do.
I think it's just been luck of the draw.
Oh. Huh.
And yeah, so I'll get lucky, and I bet in the next day or two I'll finally be able to go hands-on with one.
That's what she said.
Oh, I'm so 12.
I could not resist that one.
You know, I think the new MacBook Air looks pretty cool. And based on the benchmarks that are starting to come out, it looks like it's far more useful than I initially thought it would be. My initial thought was, okay, great, this is an awesome travel machine, but that's about it. But based on how pleased some people seem to be with the performance so far, I'm thinking for not everyone, but for a group of people, they might be able to use the 13-inch model as their only computer if they wanted to.
For sure. I mean, in particular, the resolution. What's the resolution of the 13-inch one? It's 1440 by 9...
I can't remember the exact numbers.
Is it 960 or is it 1080?
It's more than what the 15-inch MacBook Pro is, so I think it's 1080.
Let's look, actually. Let's look, because, you know, that's important, because we're like that.
Yeah. So, all right. So, while you're looking that up, I'm thinking that the lack of an optical drive is becoming less of an issue, and considering the fact that Apple ships the restore disks that previously have been DVDs as a flash drive, I think this is giving us a taste of where Apple wants to go with its laptop line down the road.
Well, I mean, Steve has much said that during the media event announcing these things.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's a good point. So, yeah, so if you go play with the new MacBook Air now, you'll be putting your hands on pretty much what you'll be getting in a MacBook Pro, who knows, a couple years from now. I'm assuming it all depends on the price of the flash memory and availability.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure that we'll see MacBook Pros with this form factor in the first part of the year. That would be my guess.
That would be kind of cool.
Not the exact form factor, because obviously these are the Airs, but the MacBook Air writ large. I mean, that's kind of what Apple did. You know, the MacBook Air, the original MacBook Air was the first unibody MacBook Pro. I'm sorry, it was the first unibody MacBook product. And then those same sort of conventions came to the Pro line and eventually made their way to the MacBook line. Right? Are we on the same page?
We are.
And I think we'll basically see something very, very, very similar. It'll probably have a FireWire port and it'll have more USB ports. And it'll have more RAM. So, all right. So that's actually one of the things that I wanted to talk about, because I was saying during the our live coverage of the event that this might be my next laptop, and that I might be replacing my Pro with it.
Well, you know, for you that totally makes sense, because you have a desktop Mac, and you use that primarily, and then you need a laptop for when you're traveling.
Yes, and I tell you, the big thing that was killing me about this thing, killing me in a good way, was the lightweight and this resolution. It's 1440 by 900. By the way,
and I mean, at the 13-inch size. Now, I know a lot of people are loving the 11.6-incher because it's so compact. But, I mean, with that 13-inch screen, at that resolution, you can do a lot on that screen.
You absolutely can. I mean, it's almost the same. It's the same horizontal resolution as my several-years-old MacBook Pro. I think I've got the second generation Intel MacBook Pro, and it's in, and it's almost as high. I think my MacBook Pro has either a 1080 vertical resolution, maybe. Yeah, I think it's like 1080. So it's a little bit, it's a little bit smaller than the old 15-inch MacBook Pro in terms of resolution. Yet it's so much smaller, and so that would be fantastic. And I was super excited about it. But then I realized that the RAM limitation on this thing is 4 gigs.
You know, on one hand, I see that as a problem. On the other hand, I see it as acceptable because Apple likes to have clear delineations between products.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what that is. And 4 gigs is fine for the Air.
Right. Yeah, this isn't a machine that I would want to be doing a lot of heavy-duty Photoshop work on or video or audio editing on.
Right, but you could do Photoshopping for your Mac Observer stuff, just not print stuff.
Oh, right. Right? Yeah, because I'm working with lower-resolution images, and yeah, it would totally work for that.
The problem for people like us comes when, I mean, like right now, let's look here. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. I have 19 apps open, and I closed a couple before we started recording. And some of those apps are pretty heavy RAM consumers. So, and the reality is that when I get working, when I'm doing stuff for TMO, you know, I am bouncing back and forth between a lot of apps. And for that reason and that, well, actually, and of course, the idea of doing a mobile recording with only 4 gigs of RAM, that doesn't work. And no FireWire drives, that also doesn't work. So I don't know. It despite what I said, and this is really why I'm mentioning it, despite what I said in the live coverage where I thought this might be my new machine, I think I'm going to have to wait until this form factor comes to the Pro line where I can get more than 4 gigs of RAM.
Yeah. Okay. So I just counted my apps mm-hmm. that I have open, and I quit several before we started recording. Uh-huh. 19.
You're at 19 too. I figured, yeah, we probably both regularly have 20 to 25 apps running at any given time when we're working.
Yeah, that seems totally reasonable. And I hadn't realized it's that many, but holy crap, it's that many. Now, if I was using one of the new MacBook Airs, say at Macworld Expo, mm-hmm. I could totally get by without any problem using something like this at shows.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
because I wouldn't be running nearly as many apps at once.
Right,
and since I wouldn't have to be doing really hardcore Photoshop work, it'd be just fine. Yeah, I could totally see having one of the 13-inchers as a travel machine. Now, if a lot of the technology that's in the MacBook Air right now makes its way soon to the MacBook Pro, I could totally see just getting that, and it becomes my one machine.
Right. And don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, woe is me. If it came to getting by, I could get by all day long on the 13-inch. It's just, it does. I know. So I just traveled for a week, and so I was working for several days with my old MacBook Pro, and it has 2 gigs of RAM. And with 2 gigs of RAM, I was bogged down a lot. And I don't think that 4 gigs is going to be all that much better. And so yeah, that's why I'm saying that I would probably have to wait a little while. But there's an important, a much more important thing than other than everything being about me or everything being about you.
Really?
Yeah, there is, actually, believe it or not. The thing is that RAM cap was, I think, is one of, and you alluded to this already, is one of Apple's artificial limitations to specifically delineate the Air line from the Pro line.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm okay with that because Apple, I mean, they're a company that needs to make a profit, and they need to have distinctions between their different products.
Well, you know, it's even more than that, too. Yeah, they do need those distinctions, and you're entirely right. But at the same time, Apple also has this great track record of making it easy for us to choose which machine we need. And this this is the closest I've been to having a tough decision. And now let's compare that. Jeff, you and I have talked about this a couple of times on the show, but we've certainly talked about it a lot between the two of us, where if we go to Dell site, for instance, or even HP site, I think HP has an infinitely better site than Dell, but
yes,
either one of those sites, trying to find the machine that you want is, in my opinion, I would rather gouge my eyes out with a rusty spoon than have to do so. I mean, I could get it done because, you know, it's not like I'm totally mentally handicapped. I'm only partially mentally handicapped. I could get it done, but I'm not going to enjoy it. You go to Apple site and it's kind of fun and it's pretty easy to understand what you need and, you know, which models you might want. And, you know, it's easy to determine what you need. So this artificial limitation is not only there to make sure that there's, you know, there is one of these barriers besides screen size between the Air and the Pro, but also to make it easier to choose. Graphics pros probably don't need to get this thing.
You know, yeah, you're right. Graphics pros, this isn't the computer for them.
Video pros? Nope.
Video pros? No. And it's not just because of the RAM limitation. It's because you can't hook up the fast external hard drives, and you're limited to the smaller screen on the go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so this isn't for the video pros, the photo editing pros, and the audio pros.
But it's for anyone who wants a light machine. And at this price point, what is it we said? We were joking around this morning during our morning staff meeting. And we were talking about how this is like the machine that everybody wishes, this is the netbook that everybody else wished they designed. And then I quipped that it was the netbook that everybody else wished they could sell.
Yes, and I thought that was a brilliant line, and I realize now that I've said that, it's going to totally go to your head, and oh God, now we're going to have to deal with that.
But my point, above and beyond my brilliance, my point was that, you know, I think, you know, what's the first thing when you saw the $999 price tag for the 11 inch model and $1,199 for the entry 13 inch? It was like, oh my God,
yeah,
that's
I actually out loud
so affordable, right?
Yeah, I said, holy crap, yeah.
I mean, that's just super affordable, yet it's still three or four times more than the crappy netbooks that are out there. And people are going to snatch this thing up in netbook numbers, and Apple's actually going to be able to make a profit on it, and you know, which they're going to turn around and use for, you know, developing more cool products and stuff. And all the PC companies are, you know, going to be making no profit on their $200 and $300 models. Yeah, it's right. You know, it's like we look at this and we think inexpensive, and I think that most Mac users would look at this thing and think inexpensive, yet it's still a lot more than the cheap crappy netbooks that are out there.
You know, you hit on something right there that I think is really important. Apple is making quality products that cost a little bit more, but you're getting what you pay for. When you look at the products that so many of the PC makers are building, it's all about that race to the bottom, and it isn't about making a quality product. It's about making something that's cheap enough that they can undercut their competition, and maybe they'll make a couple bucks, or maybe they won't.
Right. I've put it off, and you know, Dell put all their R&D into figuring out how to put one less screw into their computers. You know, and that whole competition based on price to me leaves everyone the loser. And Apple's competition on quality and style and lifestyle and experience allows them to continue to make afford. To figure out how to make machines like this incredible Air.
Yeah, I can't imagine any other company rolling out the MacBook Air like Apple just did.
Oh, no. Not even Sony.
No. It's a product that, from their marketing or market standpoint, isn't something you would even consider building.
Right. Yeah, you couldn't afford to.
And yet here's
you couldn't.
Yeah, and here's Apple.
Even if you wanted to consider it, you don't have the money to do it.
No. And if someone like Sony rolled out a product like the MacBook Air, say, a month ago, they probably would have been laughed off the stage.
Well, no,
because
I don't really.
Well,
you're gonna go with that?
Okay. Well, that's okay. it's okay for us to disagree because I'm right. My point is that had Sony or someone like that released something that was like truly equivalent to the MacBook Air and was at the same price point, people would have been balking at how much money the product cost. Now, granted, with the MacBook Air, people are looking at it going, oh my God, that compared to a cheap netbook, that's a lot of money. But you have all these people looking at it going, okay, this costs a lot less than what Apple had before, and holy crap, this is revolutionary.
Right. Right. So, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about who this product is not for. We should probably spend at least a little bit of time and kind of go over who it is for.
Right. I want it to be for me.
Fair enough.
It's such a cool little computer.
It is.
And I can find so many places where it would be useful to me. But considering I'm someone that isn't doing a dual computer system or setup, I don't know if I'll be able to justify ever buying one, which makes me sad because it's just so cool. I want it just because it's cool.
Yeah, but as a single system, so looking at who it's a great machine for, because we both agree that it's a great machine for a lot of people. I think it's great for certainly anyone whose most of their computing consists of browsing and email and document creation, and some light gaming, because this will do light gaming just fine.
Oh, sure.
And that's most people right there. That's like the vast majority of computer users.
Yeah. You know, if I didn't have to do a lot of heavy-duty Photoshop work and a lot of heavy-duty InDesign work, I could probably get by with the new MacBook Air and the video adapter so that I can use my big external display.
Right. And it'll power a 27-inch cinema display. I mean, that's crazy. That's just crazy. It's funny. If you go to order one of these, by the way, to me, it's funny that the only external display option is the 27-inch.
Yeah, well, that makes sense because that's the only thing Apple has now. But, yeah, it's also kind of funny because here's this teeny tiny computer. And the only display option Apple has for it is bigger than every TV I've had in my life up until the one that I have now.
Right. Right. Yeah. So everything you said is I'm down with. So, you know, for an awful lot of people, this could be at the very least their portable machine, and at the most their only machine.
Yeah.
They're definitely for students, for instance. You know, most students are going to be just fine with this thing.
And for people like me, if I was going to have a dual computer system where I had a desktop system for the office, I could totally justify that as my travel machine.
Yeah, fair enough. And I almost could. I wish that I could because it's so inexpensive. It's so inexpensive and it's so light. And I don't know. I bet you I end up getting one anyway. By the way, it was just pointed out to me today that these things don't have a backlit keyboard.
Yeah, that's true. They don't. I'm assuming that's a size limitation.
Yeah, I think it's one of those areas where Steve went with form over function. Because, you know, he does that a lot. And I would imagine that the next version, because the previous version of the Air had a backlit keyboard.
It did, but it was also thicker.
It was thicker. And I bet you the next version, the next iteration of the Air also has the backlit keyboard. But rather than making it, you know, 2 millimeters thicker, Steve wanted it.
They just went without.
They just did without, because that's what Apple does.
Yeah, it is. It if it had a backlit keyboard, it would be even that much harder to avoid buying one.
Yep. Alrighty, so let us move on to the Mac App Store. And let's begin this. I have a question for you.
Okay.
So if Apple were to start supplying the operating system for the Empire's AT-ATs, would they have the AT-AT Attack App Store?
Oh. Yeah, they probably would. No, actually, they wouldn't, because they would supply software for the Rebel Alliance.
Well, I don't know, man. Apple is increasingly becoming both the man and the empire.
Okay, well, then they would figure out a way to supply software to both sides.
That's probably the case.
And they'd figure out a way to do it in such a way that everyone would be okay with that.
Well, maybe. Maybe.
Oh, come on. Reality distortion field. Hello.
Yeah, good point. Good point. That was a really stupid joke. Excuse me. Pardon me while I remove this toad from my throat.
Yeah, see, you really need to stop licking cats.
Apparently. It was a stupid joke on my part, but I was just thinking, you know, App Store and Mac App Store and Apple's App Store, and it's just there's a lot of alliteration and rhyming going on.
Yes, there is.
So
and yeah. Oh, and speaking of the whole empire thing, I find it interesting that a lot of people that I've seen chattering about all this on Twitter have been saying things like, well, that's it. This is Apple showing that they're going to take complete control over how software is delivered on the Mac, and this will be the only way you'll be able to get apps, and they're just kind of freaking out. And I think they're wrong.
I think they're wrong too, but I think it's an understandable fear. And, you know, we have said, you and I have said on this show and probably elsewhere, that we accept the walled garden on our phones, but that we don't want the walled garden on our desktops.
Right. And I don't see Apple being able to force that walled garden on the Mac onto us. But I do see this as a really smart move on Apple's part, and potentially a really useful tool for developers, because there's so many people that are coming into the Mac now from iPods and iPhones and iPads that are already familiar with that style for purchasing apps. And many of these people won't have a clue where to go and look for software. So now they'll have a system that they're already familiar with. They can go and find applications, install them just as they would if they were using an iPhone or an iPad. And they're getting exposed to applications that they otherwise wouldn't find. And developers have a way of reaching these customers that they wouldn't otherwise be able to get at.
Right. Right. And it's a... I've been hoping for a Mac App Store since Apple released the App Store. I was actually disappointed when a couple of years ago, was it Steve or Tim Cook that said there won't be a Mac App Store? Remember that?
Oh, I forgot about that.
We should, of course, realize that they had already started working on the plans the moment he said that. But the idea of having a central place to very easily shop and download software for my Mac, I think is terrific. And I think it's really terrific for the casual, the developers of more casual software in particular.
Oh, yeah. And for people that are saying, oh, this is horrible, I can't believe that anyone would want to use a system like that. Well, how about Steam? That's in many ways like Apple's App Store,
right,
for the Mac. It's a common repository, in this case for games.
Right.
Yeah. So this is something that people that haven't been exposed to the App Store may very well be already familiar with.
Right, exactly. And so let's talk about it as a user. I love, again, the idea of having a central place to be able to shop and download apps for my Mac or software for my app for my Mac. Love the idea of being able to find games easily, be able to find utilities easily. You know, everybody knows what Microsoft Office is. Most everybody knows what Photoshop or Creative Suite is.
Right.
You know, people know what Final Cut Pro is. People know what. Heck, there are a large percentage of Mac users that know what BB Edit is. But how about a product like a VLC? Actually, I bet you VLC will never be offered on the App Store. So that's a really bad example on my part. But
well, you never know because they're offering it on the App Store for the iPhone and iPad.
Right. How many chess apps are available for the Mac? I don't know the answer to that. But I
John Martellaro probably
John
does.
John Arnold, he probably does. But I bet you that when the Mac App Store launches, there will be five or six to choose from just right then and right there.
Probably. And companies like Omnigroup have already said that their apps are going to be there, which means people that wouldn't otherwise know about things like OmniFocus and OmniOutliner and OmniGraffle.
Right.
Well, they'll be able to find applications like that, and there are apps that, in many cases, they'll go, oh my God, this is really something I needed, and they wouldn't otherwise have been able to find that.
Right. Or Nova Media's products. Nova Media makes some of the coolest software out there. Well, it's very highly specialized, very niche, right?
Oh, right, right.
But they, you know, they're a German company, and we're one of the few sites that gives them the attention that they deserve. If they can get their stuff onto the App Store, their sales should go through the roof.
I would assume so. And assuming companies like Smile Software decide to hop on the App Store,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, how many people out there would be able to get a lot of use out of something like PDF Pen or Text Expander,
right.
But wouldn't otherwise know that software titles like that are available?
Right. Or Storymill from Mariner Software.
Oh, right.
You know, they make several really cool products, but they're they don't have a jillion dollars to market themselves. There are so many apps that I think could benefit from this kind of exposure, and I think that it could lead to a renaissance, or even a renaissance for Mac application development, because, and this is a really important part of it, these apps that are going to be distributed through the App Store, piracy for those apps is going to be substantially and markedly lower, if not near non-existent, compared to piracy for everything else that's out there.
Yeah. I think that's very possible. I'm a little bit skeptical only because whenever copy protection is used, there's a bunch of people out there that will do everything they can to break
well,
it.
Well, yeah, but you'll have to hack iTunes. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what you'll have to do. And yes, I'm sure that people will find ways around it, but they're other than jailbreaking your iPhone, they're the copy protection on iOS apps hasn't been broken.
Yeah, that's true.
And copy
that's very true.
The copy protection on the songs hasn't really been broken either, except for jailbreaking your devices. It can be done, but it's not that commonplace.
Yeah, okay. So I think that the numbers will work out the way you're saying, but I think it'll be because the honest people that would really like to find these applications mm-hmm. will have easier access to them. Therefore, sales will go
up. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it should be a huge win for developers, and it should be a huge win for consumers. Now, the flip side of that, of course, is that we're inviting Apple's control over the software that's on the App Store. This is different from, as we've already said, this is different from what's going on iOS devices, because it's not the only way to install software on my Mac. I can still go to a company site and buy software from them, install it all I want. But we are, again, an application like VLC. Of course, VLC is free, and they'd probably never want to bother with Apple anyway, but let's pretend that they did. VLC basically plays just about every video format possible on your Mac. And it kind of wouldn't surprise me if Apple didn't allow VLC on the Mac App Store because it plays some copy-protected formats, too.
I thought that to play the copy-protected stuff, you now had to go pick up a separate application.
Oh, I have never tried, to be honest.
Of course, I might be mixing that up with Handbrake.
Right. Handbrake probably won't be on there.
I think it's very safe to say Handbrake won't be there.
There are all kinds of apps. You're not going to find any kind of course, you know, as far as I know, the internet is the biggest porn application out there. But you're not going to find a lot of, if any, porn apps for your Mac.
Oh.
You're not going to find piracy-related apps. You're not going to find, I doubt you would find BitTorrent clients. You're not going to find DVD rippers.
You know, that would be interesting to see if BitTorrent clients show up, because there are totally legitimate uses for BitTorrent. And
absolutely. It wouldn't surprise me, however, if Apple kept them off. That'll be one thing to watch for when this thing finally goes live.
Yes. Well, now we both have something that we'll be watching closely for.
Right. So if you look at the fact that we're, you know, if you use the App Store, you're inviting the walled garden. To me, that is completely balanced and counterbalanced by the fact that, again, you can go outside the walled garden anytime and every time you want to.
Yes. Yeah. The Mac App Store walled garden has a completely unlocked gate on it.
Right.
And so you can step out.
Yeah, you just go around it.
Yeah.
Just go. And again, one of the things that to me is so much different from my Mac and my phone is that I want my phone to just work always. Right? I'm willing to take more risks with my desktop computer. And that is a big part of why I will accept the walled garden on my iOS device, and I will not accept the walled garden on my Mac. And I really don't think that Apple has any desire to put a walled garden around the Mac. I don't see how it's in their best interest, and I don't see how that can help them make more money. And there are no benefits to it whatsoever. The benefits to controlling iOS, controlling iPhones, iPhones more than iPod touches or iPads, but iPhones in particular, those benefits seem crystal clear to me.
Oh yeah, I mean the notion that I could potentially install an application that makes the phone part of my iPhone not work is completely unacceptable. Because it's a phone.
Right.
It just so happens that it also is a pocket-sized computer, but it's a phone. So I'm okay with Apple putting a lot more restrictions on what can go on that device, because I don't want my phone to break.
Right. Right. I don't want my phone to break either. And again, as we've already said, that you know we're willing to take those risks on our Mac. So I'm not worried about the Mac App Store becoming the only place to get Mac apps. I understand why people are worried, and I think that it's the kind of thing that we should make clear to Apple that we will not accept, but I'm not actually worried about it happening.
Yeah, I'm not worried either. I think this is going to be fine. It's going to be just another avenue for consumers to find applications more easily.
Right. Speaking of finding web hosting more easily, worst segue ever.
I love your segues.
That was a really bad one, though. We have a new sponsor this week.
We do, which is really cool. Our new sponsor is GoDaddy.
GoDaddy.com.
Yeah, so if you're not familiar with GoDaddy, then you probably haven't been on the internet very much at all.
Or watched your TV.
Yeah, they do web hosting services.
Yeah, they do domain registration and web hosting, but they're introducing some new hosting services.
They are. So you can get web hosting with unlimited disk space and unlimited bandwidth.
Which is crazy,
but also very cool, because if say you have a really successful blog,
yep.
you don't want to have your potential readers getting cut off, and you don't want to have surprise bills that cost a fortune. So this addresses both of those things at once.
And you can have up to 1,000 email accounts, because God knows, that's just crazy. Just be honest. 1,000 email accounts. That's when you're, that's a business level stuff there. And it's less than $15 a month.
Right. You also get a free SSL certificate if you need it.
24/7 support.
Right. And, yeah. So, and they also support services, like web app sort of services, like WordPress and Joomla and Drupal.
Right, and, or as I like to call it, Drupal.
Right. So, yeah, so for everyone, it's Drupal, except for Brian.
For me.
He has the special Drupal edition.
Yes, exactly, and OS Commerce. And basically, these are all services that you can install with, mouse clicks and entering some information and stuff, rather than having to hire a nerd to do it for you.
Right.
That's huge.
It's huge. And you said, what, $15 a month?
It's less than $15 a month.
Okay. Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah, it is crazy cool. And better yet, we've got a special discount code just for you.
Oh, now see, that's awesome. I love it when we have discounts.
Mm-hmm. It's Apple 10. So basically, when you go to checkout, you'll have a place to enter a coupon code, and you will enter Apple 10. That's APPLET10 for 10% off.
Cool. That's very cool.
Yeah.
I love it when we get discounts for our listeners.
Yeah, I'm kind of fond of that too. So go check them out. And when you use that code, by the way, that lets them know that we sent you, which is good for us too.
It is. What's their website?
GoDaddy.com.
Well, that's easy to remember.
You're the best straight man ever.
Hey, thanks.
Alrighty, so let's talk about one more thing and then close on out. And that was this rather interesting thing about AT&T getting significantly more new subscriptions than Verizon.
You know, if AT&T sucks as bad as people think it does, how can they possibly be drawing in as many new customers as they are?
Well, that is a good question. And if Android is, basically going to kill and crush iOS, why isn't Verizon just scooping up the new customers left and right?
Yeah. Now, to be fair, Verizon is drawing in a lot of new customers, but
yeah,
it looks like that's being dwarfed by what AT&T is doing.
Right. A million new customers is nothing to sneeze at. For instance, it's more customers than I have.
Wow.
I really?
I didn't know.
And they had another 101 million customers before that. So Verizon still has more customers. But for the last 6 quarters in a row, AT&T has been closing that gap. And this is, think about how much bad press AT&T has gotten for dropped calls and data blocks because everybody in San Francisco is using their iPhones at one time. They've gotten a lot of bad press like that, but people are still buying the iPhones hand over fist, and obviously they're sticking with the AT&T as opposed to jailbreaking them.
Yeah, and, honestly, the quality of service that I'm getting from AT&T, I'm very pleased with.
I am largely pleased, except for my signal level at my house.
Now the signal level at your place completely sucks.
Yeah, I need to get a microcell, as I've said about 1,000 jillion times.
I'm
going to do that any day now.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so, if you're one of those folks that have written off the iPhone and that Android's going to crush it and kill it, you got to think again. You just got to think again, because the iPhone is going really, really strongly. And there's another really huge thing here, Jeff. And
oh, do tell.
That is, I've said before that if If Verizon gets an iPhone, it's going to be because Verizon blinked and will accept the iPhone on Apple's terms.
I think, yeah, you're right. It will be on Apple's terms if they get it. But, man, I just don't see Verizon blinking anytime soon.
Well, I do now because of these customer account levels. This is what's going to make Verizon blink. If AT&T actually passes Verizon, which they could do in another 6 quarters at these rates, it would be there. You know, the analysts and big investors alike would be you know, really they would really fundamentally, I think, reevaluate how they're looking at Verizon's overall business plan, business model, I still don't think we're going to see a CDMA Verizon phone, but I do think we're going to see a Verizon iPhone in probably in the summer or shortly thereafter, and it's going to be an LTE device, and it's going to be on Apple's terms.
Well, it would have to be on Apple's terms because Apple is not going to back down.
They can't afford to.
No, and I cannot imagine Steve Jobs agreeing to any of Verizon's typical terms.
No, well, they can't. They can't make that trade-off. They can't trade market share for the loss of control because it would be a floodgate.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, that's something that Apple will not do. So I agree with you. I think when we see an iPhone on Verizon, it will be LTE, not CDMA. Mm-hmm. And that it will be on Apple's terms, which means the nickel and diming for features that Verizon does won't happen. And the crapware that they would want to bundle won't happen.
Right, the side loading won't happen. It'll be Apple in control of the interface. It'll be Apple in control of the experience. It'll be Apple in control of the activation process. It's going to be just like the iPhone on AT&T.
Right, you won't see a Verizon logo on the phone. Right. The only way you'll be able to tell the difference will be when you look at the status bar on your iPhone, and it says Verizon instead of AT&T.
That would be the only Verizon logo, at least on the home screen, would be the one in the status bar.
Yeah, and it won't even be a logo. It'll just be a word.
Yeah, what do they do for AT&T now? What does my iPhone say?
It says ATT.
ATT, right. Okay, so it could say V.
Oh, actually, it does have the ampersand in it. Right. So, yeah. But, yeah, so it'll just be a word, and that'll be fine. Yeah. But, yeah, you're right. It'll be I'm totally with you. It'll be LTE, not CDMA. And I don't care how many rumors are out there right now saying that there's a CDMA iPhone coming in January to Verizon.
Yep.
Not happening. I have bets on that with friends.
Uh-huh.
Which means that at the end of this year, I get to start collecting a lot of drinks.
At the end of 2010?
At the end of 2010, because the bets were all, Verizon will have an iPhone by the end of 2010.
Oh, my God. Those absolutely are sucker not. Bets, man.
I know. They're going to be expensive drugs, too.
Your friends aren't smart, are they? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but they're cute, so, you know.
I'm just kidding. My bets are with Dave and John. We're betting a nice dinner in San Francisco at Macworld for the CDMA phone coming to Verizon in the early part of the year. So if it happens, this is the crappy thing for me because I didn't make quite the sucker bet you did. If Verizon and Apple do announce a phone before Macworld, then I'm buying dinner this Macworld. Mm-hmm. But if they don't, we really kind of have to wait until the first quarter's over. And so it'll be like Macworld 2012 before I can collect my delicious dinners.
Yeah, but you'll know those delicious dinners are
That's
coming.
That's true.
So you will know you are not going hungry at Macworld.
Right. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I'm going to collect my dinners there. So anyway, there you have it. The iPhone's still kicking butt. AT&T, despite all its supposed problems. I'm going to say again that if Apple had launched the iPhone on Verizon only instead of AT&T, that Verizon would have had just as many problems, if not more, dealing with. Matter of fact, I'll go one further. that the slow speed of Verizon's 3G network may well have slowed adoption of the iPhone to begin with. And of course, you know, it's easy for me to say this because we'll never know. But I think that Verizon would have had just as many problems as AT&T did dealing with the sea change in customer usage that the iPhone represented.
Yeah. It didn't matter who got the iPhone first. They were going to have the horrible headaches that AT&T is having.
Yep.
So it just so happens it's AT&T and not Verizon.
Yep.
So, hey, I want to derail us just for a minute.
Okay.
Because we've brought up Macworld a couple times. Uh-huh. You have a session at Macworld Expo this year, don't you?
I do. I'm doing a session with Bob Levitis. We're going to be showing people how to make and record music on their iPads.
Oh, very cool.
And you're cool. What are you doing?
I'm doing a session on cloud computing services and how to get the most out of those for your Mac and your iPad and your iPhone.
That is fantastic. Now, didn't we pitched one together, didn't we?
We did, but that didn't get selected.
Which one was that? I can't remember.
It must not have been very good. I can't remember either.
we pitched several sessions, and a couple of them didn't get picked. But yes, yeah, so you're doing the cloud computing services vis-a-vis iPad and iPhone, and Bob Levitis and I are doing music creation and recording on your iPad, which I'm looking forward to because there's a lot of really cool stuff you can do. There's a lot of really cool stuff you can do. Did I say that?
Yeah,
right?
I'm planning on coming to your session.
Oh, cool. You're the best.
Yeah, well, you know, you're a friend, and so's Bob, and it sounds like a really cool session.
I think I'm washing my hair during your session, though.
You know, I might be too. No, wait.
I kid, I'm going to be there.
Now, your hair's cool.
What?
Your hair is cool. Oh. You can do it short, you can do it crazy long, and it still works.
Oh, whatever. Thank you. You're the best. All right, let's get out of here.
All right. So, oh, that means this is where I go. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And you can feel free to follow me on Twitter. That would be twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/tmobrien. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
Hey, and stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Me under, you hold me down. After all I still I cannot go. We're trapped by lies that we both know. I can't see.